Ladies and gentlemen, welcome today to our South Australian Press Club lunch. My name is Megan Lloyd. I'm the president of the SA Press Club and I'm also the editor of the Sunday Mail. Welcome you all here today for our post-budget lunch and particularly welcome our guest speaker, our State Treasurer, the Honourable Jack Snelling. I'd also like to welcome some of our sponsored representatives, Kim Rogers, Group Manager of Telstra, Jeff Timms from Timms Manufacturing Jewellers, and there are also some other special guests. We have the Honourable Michael Atkinson, Member for Croydon, Stephen Marshall, the Member for Norwood, and the Honourable David Ridgway, MLC. And I've also seen that there's certainly some local government representatives here today. I welcome you as well, and my friends and colleagues in the South Australian media. Main course will be served shortly, and after that we will be hearing from Mr. Snelling. Today's wines, which are an important part of our lunch, you'll be enjoying from Jacob's Creek, and of course beers from SA Brewing. We will be having a raffle. The raffle tickets are on the tables. Three tickets for $5 is the usual price. The prizes today include a $300 voucher courtesy of Jeff Timms Manufacturing Jewellers. We also have a carton of beer. James Squire is today, the Chancellor Golden Ale. We also have some red and white wine courtesy of Jacob's Creek as well. I'll be introducing our guest speaker after the main course, but before I go, I can't resist an opportunity to plug some upcoming SA Press Club lunches, which I'll also do again a bit later. But for those of you who aren't aware, we have a lunch on July 5. Peter Lloyd, no relation, the ABC correspondent, very experienced in covering especially Southeast Asian affairs, the ABC, who you may remember, was arrested in Singapore after he bought a quantity of methamphetamine, which for a time there, I guess, froze his career with the ABC, certainly stopped an appointment, which was to their breakfast show. He has now returned as a producer on with Late Line, and he has a new book out detailing his experiences, both around the methamphetamine arrest, but also the Bali bombings, the Boxing Day tsunami, and the assassination of Benazir Bhutto, which all added to the post-traumatic stress, which accounted for his actions later in Singapore. Wednesday, July 27, is Chief Justice John Doyle, our Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of South Australia. The Chief Justice's topic is, and it starts, dot, 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 and then, of course, there's sentencing. So that'll be an interesting lunch for us. And also on August the 15th, another one for the diary, is Christine Nixon. That name will be familiar as the former Victorian Police Commissioner, who went on to, of course, lead the fires, rejuvenation or recovery in Victoria, and faced quite a challenging period of what she was doing on the day of the Victorian bushfires, the Black Saturday. So she will be our guest speaker on August 15. Thank you. Enjoy your main course, and I'll see you shortly. Thank you, everyone. We may get the formal part of our lunch underway. Thank you. So today we are going to hear from our guest speaker, our Church State Treasurer, Jack Snelling, delivering, I guess, what we could describe as a post-budget speech for us. Deciphering the true meaning of budget speeches can be something of a dark art. Since time began, treasurers of all persuasions have taken to the dispatch box on budget day or night to pledge a stronger economy, one that promotes jobs, except it seems if you're in the public service, while also spreading opportunity for all. The Google search term, great budget speeches, is almost nonsensical. There are none, apparently. Budget speeches never seem to make those lists of great and memorable speeches. I guess, how do you make tax hikes on just about everything and cuts to the rest? Inspiring. Perhaps it's also the language that's used. Let's face it, treasurers rarely seem to call it as they truly see it. Even going back to the 1780s, when the then British Chancellor of the Exchequer, William Pitt, used his budget speech to introduce what he described as a temporary measure to overcome the debt that they had accrued fighting the American War of Independence. And what was that temporary measure? Income tax. As we know today, there was nothing temporary about it. So to June 2011 and the first budget speech by Treasurer Jack Snelling. A steady-as-she-goes budget, said the advertiser, aimed at consolidation rather than innovation. Measured and responsible, with many cost-saving measures to be endorsed and applauded. A classic budget, said Ian Daly. Beer went up, taxes went up, and government hopes for the future were high. Mike Smithson, in my own paper, described Mr Snelling's congenial, almost angelic style. His budget delivery was calm and controlled and showed a sound knowledge of his new role. Michael Maguire in the Advertiser said Mr Snelling's favourite words were moderate, responsible, comfortable and restrained. Symbolism is essential in budget speeches. There is no doubt, as Maguire pointed out, we were meant to see this year a different treasurer and a new era. Budget papers were coated in soft blues and carried a picture of a nurse and baby. Inside the front of the budget was overview document was a picture of also of Mr Snelling and his family. And of course somebody chose lights alliteration, so we had strong, secure and supportive. So he handled his budget press conference with impressive confidence. For those of us that weren't there, he was only momentarily apparently taken aback when the advertiser's Greg Kelton referred to him as a budget virgin and asked if he now felt satisfied. Calling on his renowned debating skills, Mr Snelling quickly fired back a quip that he had now lost his cherry. Yes, but is he still enjoying a post-coital budget high? Enough of the innuendo. Treasurer Jack Snelling.
Thank you very much, Megan. And Michael, I noticed your budget bingo didn't include cherry on the list, perhaps next year, although I think we might avoid louche remarks in next year's budget lock-up. Strong, secure, supportive. There was some wag in the gallery who suggested that there was the slogan for a sports bra, but I can assure you that's not where the idea came from. I'll quickly run through the budget, what's in it. Most of you here will be familiar with what I'm going through. I know it'll be about the 20th time I've done it, but I'll quickly race over it and then put in a little bit of commentary and particularly some comparisons about where we are situated as a state compared to Victoria. So certainly we had a little bit of money, not very much money available for new spending. We had a big downturn in our revenues, principally a downturn in our GST revenues, so there was little capacity for new spending. I wanted that to be targeted at those most vulnerable in the community. So we identified the disability sector and child protection as two key areas in need of funding, and so helping the most vulnerable was obviously a key theme of the budget. We are still unrolling a massive infrastructure spend, $9.1 billion going through the forward estimates, the greatest amount of money South Australia has ever spent in capital expenditure, but at the same time keeping our levels of debt to sustainable levels and levels that are consistent with the AAA credit rating. The main items of expenditure in the families area, resources for disabilities, family reunification, helping families who've had their children removed, giving them the tools, the skills, the life skills that they need so children can be returned to families, and obviously more money to assist us. There are more children being taken into state care than there were before. Despite our best efforts, it's becoming increasingly frequent, and so it's a key area of budget need, and introducing the heating and cooling concessions so people who have medical conditions that require them to use air conditioning more often have some extra help with their heating and cooling costs. $133 million extra into health over the 4 years of the budget for more doctors, more nurses, to create that extra capacity that we need in our health system. And, of course, new support for digital breast screening, cancer screening, to make sure that we can use the new digital technology, which allows us to scan, I think of the numbers, about 26,000 more women every year for breast cancer, and potentially save hundreds of lives. More money in justice and emergency services for forensic science, SA, to increase the, as the DNA technology comes into its own, there's greater demand for use of that technology, and prescribed burning, money for prescribed burning, one of the key recommendations of the Victorian Royal Commission into the Victorian bushfires was the need for prescribed burning on public land, so it's more money put aside to conduct that. And of course, in the education area in particular, money to assist schools with higher electricity costs. Obviously, those higher costs are being driven partly by high electricity, the higher cost of electricity, but also by all the new equipment schools now have: computers, laptops, AV equipment, air conditioning, putting schools, school communities under pressure. So some more money to assist them. With regard to lotteries, early in my term as Treasurer, I was advised by Treasury that this was an issue that needed to be looked at by government sooner or later. The SA Lotteries is a good business, but is under certain pressure because of increasing competition and the volatility of the gambling market, and that the government will have to look at whether it continued its involvement in the gambling market. I've decided as part of this budget that we would withdraw direct involvement in the gambling market, but at the same time retain ownership of SA Lotteries and the SA Lotteries branding, but a licence a private operator to come and conduct that business on our behalf. We've had approaches, made no secret, there have been approaches to government, unsolicited approaches from various parties who are interested in the business, and so now we'll work up that proposal. It will probably require legislation to make it happen, but we'll make sure that we have the conditions are put in place to protect the interests of the various agencies who rely on Lotteries SA for their livelihoods. Lotteries SA delivers about $80 million in revenue every year to the government. About $60 million of that is in gambling taxes, $20 million of that is in dividend. We will keep receiving the $60 million in gambling taxes, and that money, of course, will go straight into hospitals. The budget continues its massive infrastructure investment, as I said, $9.1 billion. Responsible level of borrowings for productive investment, $3.4 billion in 2011-12. A small part of our capital investment program has been delayed. Just to smooth out our debt curve, you'll see our debt curve in a couple of slides, and you'll see how peaky, spiky it is. So really, by delaying some of our project, it keeps our debt level at a level that's consistent with the AAA credit rating, just smooths it out a bit, our debt profile. Small part of the capital investment program that's been delayed, the standardisation of the rail network and the outer harbour electrification, now put back to 2015-16. The rebuild of the plenary building at the convention centre, the original part of the convention centre was scheduled to be demolished and rebuilt, money being put aside in the budget. We're now delaying that to 2015-16. Oakland's road capacity improvements, anyone's familiar with the Oakland's crossing, it's very congested. There was money put aside to do something about that crossing. It became apparent that what was originally envisaged wasn't going to fix the problem, so we're going back to the drawing board to replan that. So that will take some money out of the forward estimates. The Stage 3A of the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, I notice this retracted some criticism from the AMA. You've got to keep in mind that we're still proceeding with the Stage 2 redevelopment. That's $127 million put into the redevelopment of the Queen Liz. That is due to finish from memory next year. And Stage 3A, we're just delaying essentially by 12 months. So it will still happen. It's just being delayed by a year. And the Noarlunga Health Service, likewise, another redevelopment which is being put back 12 months. So if you have a look at this slide, you'll see what our capital expenditure looks like going right back to 1998-99. Very low levels of capital expenditure, really only just above depreciation, going up and peaking at just under $2.2 billion in 2010-11, 2011-12, similar amount of money, and well above depreciation. So what we're seeing here is we are building our asset stock, building our economic capacity. So the debt that we're taking on is being put into productive areas of the economy, areas which future generations are going to benefit from. And we are building or investing well above depreciation. So to get an idea what I said in the budget speech, if we were a household with a combined income of $100,000, the debt that we pay, our peak debt, which is I think $4.2 billion, would be akin to having a $26,000 mortgage. So a very sustainable, very modest amount of debt for our state to undertake. And I'll have a look to show you some comparisons about where we sit relative to Victoria, which I think is a good comparison state for our purposes. But the other important thing is that we're not borrowing to finance the day-to-day operations of government. We're not borrowing to pay wages. We're not borrowing because we can't or won't pay for what we can't or won't pay for today. We're borrowing to increase our asset stock. It'll improve our economy. It'll make us a wealthier, more productive state, and it's on assets that will be enjoyed by future generations. In terms of developing our transport infrastructure, we have the massive Metropolitan Rail Revitalisation Project. I think when it's completed, it's about a $2 billion investment in our rail infrastructure. In terms of funding in this budget, there is money for the electrification of the Gawler Rail Line and the Seaford Rail upgrade, so the extension and the electrification of the Seaford Rail. The South Road Superway, an $800 million project, which will ease congestion, create greater capacity in one of our biggest and most important transport corridors, and the duplication of the Southern Expressway. The duplication, which is costing us $450 million, but if the project had been done properly to begin with, would have cost only an extra $60 million, $65 million from memory. So we're having to pay a great deal more for something if it had just simply been done properly in the first place, would have cost us a fraction. The new initiatives, the new computerised train protection system, our trains with the electrification will become more frequent and faster, so this will be a new protection system which will make those trains faster. Improvements to regional roads and freight routes in particular, shoulder sealing in our rural roads. A lot of cars, people come to grief on rural roads when they run off the road, lose control of their car and end up hitting a tree. Rural shoulder sealing has enormous benefits in terms of preventing those sorts of accidents. Increased capacity of park and rides. I know if anyone lives in the northeastern suburbs who comes into the city on the Oban track, I think you've got to be there at about 5:30 in the morning if you've got any hope of getting a car park at those park and rides. So this will increase the capacity of those park and rides. We want to make it easier for commuters to come into the city by public transport. Rising petrol prices are putting greater demands on our public transport system. This will be a key investment to help them. And of course, pedestrian safety cameras at school crossings. When I was Road Safety Minister, I had a couple of schools come to see me. They had pedestrian crossings. They were situated on major arterial roads. They were very worried a child was going to be killed on one of those arterial roads, a child crossing the road by a red light runner. And so one of the things they've been asking for is to get safety cameras at their pedestrian crossings, so special money put aside for that. Our GST revenue is down at the moment, and we had the budget really locked and loaded about a week or so before the federal budget, and we decided what we're going to spend money on, and we're ready, more or less ready to go. When the news came through from the Commonwealth that
they were publishing in the Commonwealth budget papers that the national GST take was down $1.5 to $1.6 billion every year, and that would have a consequent reduction, of course, for South Australia. We get about 9%, or just 9% of that. So over the forward estimates, about a $600 million reduction. So we really had to go that late stage, go back to the drawing board and try and find about $500 million out of the forward estimates to make sure that our debt levels were consistent with the AAA. And that's one of the primary reasons why you see such a modest level of spending. It's why we've had to reprofile some of our capital projects. We rely, those Commonwealth figures are what we use in their own figures in terms of what we expect to get in GST receipts. We don't come up with our own figures. We just rely entirely on the Commonwealth to tell us what we expect to get. I'm hoping that as consumers go out and spend more, that our GST receipts will recover. But it's an interesting phenomenon. We have the highest savings rates for Australian households that we've seen since the 1980s. I saw a couple of weeks ago a table in the Fin Review. We are up there with Germany in terms of how much our Australian households are saving. They're paying down their debt and they're building up their bank balances. Now, whether that is a permanent shift in spending patterns in Australia or whether that's just a temporary phenomenon, we are yet to see. But I have to... In many ways, it's a good thing for the Australian economy. It creates greater domestic liquidity. It means our banks can source their finances when they're going online and invest in capital projects. They're not having to go overseas for money. We're getting more liquidity, which is sourced locally. So that is all a good thing. It keeps interest rates lower as well than they otherwise would be. So that is a good thing. But it does knock around our GST receipts. 29% of our revenue comes from GST transfers. So when you see a big decrease, like we're witnessing at the moment, in household consumer spending, it knocks our GST receipts for six and creates pressure in the budget. Lower property-related tax revenue as well. Our property market here in South Australia, in fact nationally, but South Australia in particular, is very soft. A couple of very modest new revenue measures, the introduction of annual liquor licensing fees, which will raise about $3.6 million a year. This is simply a cost recovery measure. Almost all the Australian and other Australian states have annual fees for liquor licensing. South Australia is one of the last states where you can get a liquor licence, you pay up front money, you never have to pay anything after that. So the introduction of an annual licence will simply go towards the cost of regulating the sector. It goes hand in hand with the reforms the government's looking at with regard to 24-hour trading and better regulation of the sector to address some of those social problems that have been particularly identified by the police. And a small increase above inflation of motor registration fees. The money for this, some $2 million every year, specifically targeted in regional roads and regional roads in Kangaroo Island in particular. It's a very modest amount of money which we're targeting on those critical regional roads where some investment is badly needed. Coming tax changes, were not announced in this budget, they've been announced previously, but are about to happen, the indexing of the land tax thresholds, which is a very important tax reform for this state. One of the land taxpayers have long taken issue with the fact that as property prices rise, they get pushed into ever higher tax brackets. So we're indexing the threshold, so that will not happen. As property prices rise, the brackets will rise with them, so people will find themselves paying a fairly consistent level of tax relative to the value of their property. And abolishing that reform that will take place on the 1st of July this year, it's an important tax reform. Secondly, abolishing stamp duty on non-real property transfers from the 1st of July next year. So when you transfer a business, you will only pay tax on the real assets that that business holds. You won't pay stamp duty on those non-tangible things such as goodwill. So I've said it's, with regard to expenditure, it's a very modest budget, subdued revenue reinforces the responsible spending controls. You'll see here a 0.1% increase in expenditure of 11-12 over the 10-11 financial year. That is the lowest increase in expenditure in the entire history of this government, with then a contraction, a real contraction in 12-13 of 2.4%, a a 1.1% reduction in 13-14, and then it's stabilising. So as those savings measures kick in, we will see real contraction in the public sector to cope with the fact that our revenues are down so much. The savings measures, additional FTE reduction of 400 spread into lots in 12-13 and 13-14, 200 each, that's just being allocated across agencies on a pro rata basis. It saves about $31 million a year once it's fully carried out. Reducing the first home bonus, phasing it out, it's $8,000 if you're a builder of a new home and you're a first home buyer. You get $8,000 at the moment. That will continue for the next 12 months. It will then, from the 1st of July next year, phase down to $4,000 for 12 months and then phased out altogether. I'm hoping that that might have a bit of a stimulatory effect on our housing market at the moment. It's very weak, and I'm hoping some people who are perhaps holding out on the decision to build a new home might bring their decision forward while the $8,000 is still there. It's important to remember the $7,000 first homeowner grant, which all first home buyers get regardless of whether they're building a new, constructing a new home or buying an existing home, remains in place. This is a bonus that's been in place for a little while. And streamlining of SAFECOM, the agency which coordinates our fire and emergency services, streamlining their functions will save $2 million a year. So because of this downturn in revenues, we've had to delay the return to surplus by 12 months with a deficit forecast for 11-12, but strong surpluses from 12-13 with a substantial surplus in 2014-15 of $655 million. The net lending figures remain in deficit right through until 14-15, and that just reflects the big infrastructure spend which the government is undertaking. Net debt peaks in 13-14 at 4.3% of gross state product. You compare that to the Commonwealth figures, the Commonwealth debt is 7.2% of GDP. So as I said, a very modest amount of debt for the state. I know these figures in anyone's language are very large, but as I said, if you considered South Australia, if you took South Australia as a household with a combined income, household income of $100,000 a year, this would be akin to a $26,000 debt. So $26,000 mortgage. So a very moderate amount of debt. And of course, you wouldn't want to have $26,000 on your credit card and racking up as you went and you were using your credit card to pay your grocery bills and pay your electricity bills, but that's not what we're doing. We've got $26,000 for infrastructure that will be enjoyed by future generations, will expand our ability, expand economic activity in the state. Debt then declines to 2014-15. One of the other reasons why we put these big surpluses in 14-15, why we're building that into the system, is because in 15-16, we'll see the Royal Adelaide Hospital come onto our state's balance sheets. That'll be a $2.8 billion debt. Now, it's not money we've actually gone out and borrowed. It's simply the accounting treatment of it because it's a PPP, but that will come on to our balance sheets in 2015-16. We need to make sure that there's capacity to absorb that big hit to our balance sheet when it comes online in 15-16, and I also want to create some capacity in the budget to pay our debt down sooner rather than later, if at all possible to do so. In terms of the economic outlook, you've got solid economic growth of 2.75%. Some sectors of our state economy are being hit around by the high Australian dollar. Our two biggest export earners in this state are wine exports and higher education. They are both suffering from a high Australian dollar and put under particular pressure from the high dollar. Continued growth in employment. With these figures, we haven't taken into account, aren't able to take into account the Roxby Downs expansion. When that is given final go-ahead, then you'll see that incorporated into these numbers and you'll see much stronger economic growth, much stronger employment growth when Roxby Downs can finally be taken into account. But for the moment, the way the forecasters, the economic forecasting rules work, we have to wait until it's been given final go-ahead. But we know it's very confident that it's going to happen. We're in negotiations with BHP at the moment, so this is a project that is happening. You'll see in future budget papers, much, much stronger economic growth on the back of the Roxby Downs expansion. So we just look for a moment at the Victorian budget and where we sit. The Victorian budget was released on the 3rd of May. you'll see that we have consistently lower net debt as a percentage of gross state product. Our net operating balance by 2014-15 is more than $370 million further in surplus compared to the Victorians, and the net financial liabilities as a percentage of revenue lower in each year of the forward estimates. So if you have a look at this graph here, net debt as a percentage of gross state product, which gives us a good comparisons to Victoria, what our public sector debt is compared to the Victorian government, you see there's for 11-12 at 5%, ours at just over 4. Their debt then rises to just under 6%, whereas ours remains fairly constant at just above 4% before a big decline in 2014-15. So as a percentage of gross state product, we have very healthy finances, a very moderate amount of debt which we're taking on. In terms of our net financial liabilities to revenue ratio, this is one of the key figures that the ratings agencies look at, because what it is, it looks at what is our state's capacity to pay what we have borrowed. Now, 90% is about where the ratings agencies start to scratch their heads and have a think about whether your AAA credit rating should be should another look at it should be taken. We have done very well to hold on to our AAA credit rating, given that we've gone well over 90% into the 95% range for our net financial liabilities to revenue ratio. But the fact that we have a plan for getting that debt down to under 90% is, and the confidence that the ratings agencies have in the government's ability to deliver that, is one of the key reasons why we've retained the AAA despite that increase, and the fact that the ratings agencies understand that what's driven that increase has been very much a downturn in our revenues post the global financial crisis. But if you compare us to Victoria, which retains its AAA credit rating, you have net financial liability to revenue ratio well in advance, well over 100%, almost touching 105%. So if you compare that to South Australia, where we get down by 2014-15 to under 90%, and the Victorian liabilities to revenue ratio is still stuck at above 100%. We have very healthy state finances, very healthy state finances indeed, and I'm very confident that we'll continue to retain the AAA credit rating. I should say that one thing about this figure is it includes your unfunded superannuation liabilities are factored into this percentage. But compared to Victoria, which has in some ways a similar state economy to ours, certainly at the moment, while our resources sector is yet to really come into its own. So in terms of the sort of economic fundamentals of the state, we have very, very sound finances, a very moderate amount of debt, and our capacity to pay back what we've borrowed is certainly very healthy. In terms of their surpluses, the Victorians are running surpluses, very modest surpluses, less than $200 million going through the forward estimates period, where we are still in deficit 11-12, but then we return it to surplus in 12-13 and then post a very big net operating balance surplus in 14-15, while the Victorian surplus is still stuck at $200 million. So again, a good indicator of where we sit relative to the Victorians. Now really, the pressure is now on the Liberal Party and the opposition to really point out what their position is. There's two key measures being taken in this budget. The first is cross-lotto, issuing a licence, inviting a private operator to come in and operate across the SA lotteries on our behalf. Really calling upon the opposition to make what their position is clear, and as well the position on whether you have continue to have a job for life once you're employed in the South Australian Public Service. The government has announced as part of the budget measures that we will honour our commitment with regards to no-force redundancies that was made at the not last election. But really we need to, but after the next election and a new term of government, if you've been a redeployee for longer than 12 months, then the government will be able to separate you with all your entitlements and so on, using the current provisions of the Public Sector Act. But really calling upon the opposition to make clear what their position is on these two issues. It will be an issue going into the next election, the position on redeployees, and the opposition need to make their position clear. At the moment, we don't know what their position is. We don't know what their position is on SA lotteries and on having a private operator come in and operate for us, and we don't know what their position is on the issue of treatment of redeployees. So if I just bring it back to what I said at the very beginning, the job of the Treasurer is to look at the financial state of the government to make sure that our policy settings are right, so that we're not living off our credit card and accruing the sort of debt which is going to be left to our kids to pay. And really that's what's driven me in putting forward, in drawing up this budget, to make sure that what we are borrowing, we're borrowing the assets which future generations are going to enjoy and which is going to increase the economic capacity of the state, and as well as, but at the same time, we're not borrowing for the day-to-day expenses of government. We're not borrowing because we don't want to pay today, or we're expecting our children to pay tomorrow what we won't or can't pay for today. And so that's how I frame the budget, with that very much in mind, and that's how I'll continue to run the finances of this state. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Treasurer. We have a microphone set up in the middle of the room. Those of you who have been with us will know the drill, that now it is time for questions, which we will happily take. I'd ask you to keep them short, and obviously they are trying to stick to a question. Chris.
Treasurer, Chris Russell from the Advertiser. The government's made a lot about the two new sectors of the economy, defence and mining. With defence, taxpayer support was provided in establishing Techport Australia, and it certainly had a great success in getting the air warfare destroyer contracts here. The mining industry for a long time has been calling for government support to underwrite, and not necessarily pay for, the Port Bonython port on the Eyre Peninsula. Why does the government continue to resist providing that support?
Well, the problem, one of the problems we have with mining infrastructure, one of the disadvantages we have over Western Australia, is Western Australia have large mining companies that have the wherewithal to build the sort of infrastructure that they need, whereas our mining sector is dominated by lots of small companies that don't have that capacity. We need to look at some innovative ways of sharing the infrastructure. Certainly, I will look to any case which is put to me with regard to government participation in building that infrastructure, and if it makes economic sense, we'll do it. But we need to have a good look at what the business case is. But I'm certainly aware of the need in the mining sector for ways of allowing lots of small mining companies to get access to infrastructure to help the sector thrive. So certainly look very closely at any proposal which is put to me, whether it be the Port Bonython or any other project. Daniel.
Yeah, Daniel Wilson, the Advertiser. You said that the budget had to be almost completely rewritten after the downgrading in GST revenue. I'm curious to know what goodies were taken out and what costs were included.
The main things that were changed was the decision to get rid of the or to phase out the first home owner bonus. The reprofiling of the capital projects had to be done in the light of that downturn in revenue. They were the main things. There were some spending proposals originally had, particularly some capital projects that were going to be funded in this budget, but not able to do them this year, but they'll certainly be first in the priority for next year. When our revenues improve.
Angelique Johnson, ABC. In his second to last budget, Kevin Foley said going forward he'd have to restrict public sector wage rises to 2.5%. In your budget, you've mentioned the risk of a blowout in wage costs. So far, how many EBs have you negotiated to a 2.5% rise? And of those still pending, such as for ambulance officers, will you be limiting those to 2.5%?
Well, I don't know off the top of my head how many there have been. Certainly the main one with the PSA, the wage rises were restricted largely to 2.5%. That was the one that was going to have the biggest impact. There's some areas where it is going to be difficult to do that, and the police enterprise bargain in particular, simply because police officers are highly skilled and in high demand elsewhere in other parts of the economy. And if we're to retain experienced police officers and to continue to meet our targets in terms of expanding the size of the police force, we had to give some ground on and be a bit more flexible than we otherwise would have with regard to the 2.5%. With regard to the number, I'd have to get back to you on exactly how many that is, but certainly in terms of the big one with the Public Service Association was pretty much restricted to 2.5%.
So will other public servants, such as ambulance officers, pay the price for the increase in the police EBA?
Well, we'll negotiate every enterprise bargain on its merits. It's not done out of Treasury. It's done out of the Department of Premier and Cabinet who handle those pay rises. They do it, obviously, consulting with Treasury about how much money there's available, but we certainly do need, as far as possible, to restrict wage growth to make sure that these budget numbers are delivered on. Sarah.
Hello, Sarah Martin from the Advertiser. Treasurer, given the surpluses that are forecast in 12-13 and 13-14 are fairly small, and given the dependency on GST revenues for the position of the state budget, how confident can you be that you will deliver those surpluses in the years ahead?
Sorry, how confident can I be?
That you will actually deliver those. They don't really allow much room for error.
Yeah, well, indeed. And certainly if there was a downturn in further downturn in our GST revenues or in our property revenue, then that would give me grave cause for concern, and we'd have to have a look at what other areas of the budget we might need to, you know, to review our spending on. I am hopeful, confident might be saying too much, but I'm certainly hopeful that what we've seen is our revenues really bottom out. I'm not expecting that we'll see further deterioration in our revenues. It's important as well, one of the important things, one of the things which does give me hope is other areas of a tax collection are holding up, such as payroll tax. So people might not be spending as much money, but they've still got jobs. And that certainly gives me cause for confidence about the direction the state economy is headed in. But certainly, if we had a further deterioration, substantial deterioration in our GST revenues from the Commonwealth, that would certainly make delivering on these surpluses, the two surpluses in 12-13 and 13-14, very, very difficult. We'd have to have a good look at the budget situation to see whether there was some spending which, you know, shouldn't be happening, and perhaps undertake another round of savings measures. But having said that, I am reasonably confident that that won't be the case, that we've turned the corner and the revenues will begin to improve.
And just further to that, last year in the budget you were forecasting growth for the state at 3.5%. That's been downgraded to 2.75%. What has changed since last year?
I think a couple of things. The tsunami in Japan and general global economic outlook will affect growth. And the disasters in Queensland, the need to rebuild in Queensland, will have flow-on effects for South Australia. So a combination of those things have led us to downgrade the growth. But we're confident that once a final decision is made on go-ahead with Roxby Downs expansion, we'll see those growth figures look much more healthy.
Thank you.
Adam.
Treasurer Adam Todd from Channel 10. On public service tenure, you've just challenged the opposition to state their position on public service tenure, saying it'll be an issue in the 2014 election. But what is the government's position on public service tenure? Are you ending tenure purely for those in the transit lounge, as you've called it, or will you seek to expand the end of tenure across the entire public service?
No, look, all we're looking at is, or all we're proposing is that after the next election, if you've been a redeployee for longer than 12 months, then you'll be able to be separated. We're not looking at ending tenure across the board. We don't think that it is acceptable or up to community standards that someone could be a redeployee, not be able to find alternative employment in the public sector for longer than 12 months, and the taxpayers just have to pay them a salary indefinitely, which is basically what's happened now.
And just on your tenure, Kevin Foley used this speech last year to say he was happy doing what he was doing for another 7 years. That didn't quite work out. How long do you want to be Treasurer for?
Well, as long as the Premier and as long as the people of South Australia are happy for me to continue in this job. I'm enjoying it immensely. It's an incredibly challenging job, but I'm finding it extraordinarily fulfilling, and certainly hope to be here for a long time yet, and certainly expect to be addressing this luncheon next year.
Barbara Hardy, who's not from directly from the media, but very much involved in the influence of the media in any aspect of South Australia's economy and environment. And that's, as you might guess, is what I'd like to ask you about. In fact, the economy depends on environmental resources. And I'd like very much to ask you, I noticed in the budget there was not any mention about environmental resources and their maintenance or improvement or anything like that, and yet the whole economy depends on the health of our natural resources. So could you make a comment on that for me, please?
Well, certainly what you say is right. There's already money being spent by the government in the area of the environment, particularly in with regard to sustainability and renewable energy. The government leads the nation with regard to renewable energy. So there already was existing money going into those in sort of environmental issues. In terms of new money, there was not a huge amount of new money to spend. I'm sure there's lots of worthy things in the environment that are in need of additional resources, but there wasn't the capacity in this budget to do that. In terms of the environment, the most pressing issue which the Minister for the Environment came to me with what were to do with prescribed burning on public land, it's quite clear. And the Royal Commission of Victorian Bushfires made clear the importance of a program of prescribed burning on public land to get down the fuel loads, to make sure we didn't have a disaster here in South Australia on the scale that we saw in Victoria in 2007. So the little bit of extra money we did have, we put into expanding our program of prescribed burning, employing new firefighters who undertake that prescribed burning.
Thank you, Mr. Treasurer, and I hope that you will always think when you're having your discussions with your colleagues that the economy depends on natural resource health.
Yes, of course.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Treasurer, Brad Crouch from the Sunday Mail. An interesting confidential document came into my possession yesterday which will cause considerable concern amongst many people across South Australia. It's an electricity bill. It was given to me by a pensioner, a single female. Since the last comparable period, it's gone up by more than $70, even though she was in hospital for several weeks at that time, so no one was at home. She's already cut off her gas for a stove. Her plan now is to use candles. Her possible plan is to use candles and to wear a Snuggie at night instead of turning on the heat. What she's going to do when a water bill comes up, I've got no idea. It's not only pensioners affected by rising water and power costs. There's lots of families out there worried about it, regardless of talk about mining boom and defence booms. They're worried about how they're going to pay their bills. You've talked about GST revenue being down because people aren't spending. If because of rising water and power bills, people don't use discretionary money to go spending in retail shops and so forth, is there a risk the economy is going to stall?
I don't think there's a risk. I don't think that there's a risk that the economy is going to stall. But there's no doubt that pensioners, families are under pressure from high cost of living, utility bills, grocery bills, fuel prices. They are all heading north. Question for me with this budget is: we had little new capacity. I mean, I could have solved this problem straight away by simply throwing millions and millions of dollars out and running up our state debt. But I really don't think that that's doing anyone any favours. I think that is essentially gambling with the inheritance of our kids and expecting our kids to pay for something that we're not willing to pay for today. We've got to make sure my first priority for South Australian families is making sure that we're not running up a debt that's going to be left for our children to have to pay because we are unwilling or unable to pay for it today. If there'd been capacity in this budget to ease some of those cost of living issues, then of course I would have done it.
but there simply was not the capacity to address those cost of living issues in any major way. The small capacity that we did have to, I focused on where I thought it was most needed, and that's with people who have a medical condition that requires them to access medical heating and cooling, to up their concessions. So we've doubled their concession to, I think, $330 to make it more affordable for those people to get the air conditioning or the heating that they need for their medical condition. So the little amount of money that we did have available to us, I focused on those. And, of course, in the next 12 months, we're going to be looking very carefully at how government might be able to ease some of those cost of living issues. But for the moment, I wouldn't have been able to do it without putting the budget in an unsustainable position. I wasn't prepared to do that. Michael.
Michael, I'm from The Australian. Might just delve into some real politics for a moment, if we can. And you're said to be very ambitious. So if the Premier steps down before the next election, as everyone in your party says that he will, are you ready to lead?
I think the only person who's been saying I'm very ambitious or that I'm fiercely ambitious, Michael, is you. So, look, I'm not going to engage in any speculation.
What would that be based on, Treasurer?
The Premier, well, it's not on anything I've said to you. The Premier has indicated that he will, he's undertaken to complete this term of government. Anything else is just pure speculation. I'm not going to engage in it.
Treasurer, Chris McLaughlin, ABC News. On net operating balance, I appreciate not everyone's got this or has seen it, but if you've got the net operating balance and net lending both in the red this year and next, how is it that you don't need to borrow to pay day-to-day expenses?
Because we're getting into surplus as quickly as we can. The net lending is in deficit because that reflects our capital spend. Net lending treats infrastructure investment different from the net operating balance, and so that's why that's in deficit, because it reflects that capital spend. The net operating balance will return to surplus, and that's the important thing. It will return to surplus by 12/13, with a big surplus there in 14/15. So we're not borrowing to pay our wages bill. We're borrowing to increase our the state's asset stock.
And just on the lottery sale, is $60 million final? Is there any wriggle room on that return?
Sorry, what do you mean, Chris?
Well, you want $60 million a year out of the licensee.
Oh, okay. Would we be prepared to negotiate that? I can't see why we would need to. Certainly that gambling tax is established in legislation. We wouldn't, I wouldn't be looking at reviewing that as some sort of incentive to someone to come in and purchase the licence. No. I think the $60 million the gambling tax would remain the same. I can't see circumstances why we'd want to change it.
Christopher Gelly, I'm very pleased that you say you're going to retain the ownership of SA Lotteries. I think that's very important. My question, it's a federal matter, but is there life for all of us after the dreaded, nonsensical carbon tax?
Well, I'm sort of reluctant to be drawn on what's basically an issue for the federal government, but I think what's been revealed lately is that some of the schemes that we have for renewable energy actually end up costing us more than a carbon tax would. At the moment, we're doing things creating incentives for companies, to people, individuals to invest in renewable energies, which if you had a carbon tax, you wouldn't need to do. And we end up with schemes that are more expensive than a carbon tax and less effective. So I'll just say that in defence of the Commonwealth's proposal for a carbon tax. Yes.
Yeah, Barry Barrett, public relations practitioner. I think I, like everyone else here today, have been very impressed with what you've told us, and in our estimation, you're right at the top drawer. It is probably a fact of life, if the polls are correct, that she won't be in this position of power for much longer, which would be unfortunate, I think, for the citizens of South Australia, would you consider switching to another party where your abilities where your abilities may have been used in the future?
Well, it was interesting because when I became treasurer, Isabel Redmond came out and attacked me for being too right wing. So I'm not sure the Liberal Party would have me because they think I'm too conservative. So I don't think so. I don't think they'll have me. I'm quite happy in the political party I'm in. Mike.
Yeah, Treasurer Mike Smithson, Channel 7, Sunday Mail, 5AA.
Everything.
That was for Megan's
benefit. All-round good guy.
She's very good to me. This just requires a one-word answer, a yes or a no, and it's without notice. Would it disturb you if it could be proven there was collusion between the SA Travel Commission and a private operator? Collusion that there is a blurring of lines, that perhaps there has been a favouritism given to a private operator by the SA Travel Commission?
I can't answer that without knowing more of the details.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
If you give me the details, collusion I'll be anywhere, able to give an answer.
Collusion anywhere between a government office
well,
and private
enterprise.
Well,
it depends on what you mean by collusion.
All right, I'll speak to you later.
Yeah.
About it.
Yes.
I'm Tweed from the UniSA's On the Record. I was just wondering, with the reduction in household spending, do you think it's because of the rising dollar people are opting to buy more items online because it's a lot cheaper? And what would you have retailers here do because of that?
I don't think it's being affected by people shopping online. Yeah. I don't think that's affected. I think people genuinely are putting their money in the bank. They're paying loans down. So if they've got debts, they're getting those debts paid down. And they're putting money in the bank, and that's pretty clear. Online shopping certainly has a potential impact on our GST receipts long term, because generally when you buy stuff online, you don't pay GST. But at the moment, advice from the Commonwealth Treasury is it's not affecting the GST receipts terribly much.
I heard that there was going to be a tax imposed on $100 sales once you buy
right.
from overseas.
I don't know. I haven't heard that. Yeah. I'm not, to my knowledge, that's not in the wind. But certainly the Commonwealth's going to have to look at what happens to our GST revenue given what's happened with the explosion of online shopping.
Thanks.
That's okay. Okay. One more.
Can I just ask you, with your comparison with the Victorian financial position, it would seem that their subsidisation of South Australia ought to cease through the GST receipts, and with the review of GST funding, as South Australia's consistently funded by the other states, and if our financial position is better than theirs, surely they should stop subsidising us.
Well, we do collect a high share of GST revenue, and what that reflects is just if you put aside the states and imagine that we had a Commonwealth where there were no states and there was just a central government in the Commonwealth would have to spend more money in the area of South Australia to deliver services and to deliver services at a comparable level across the country. Because we have a federation and we have state governments, well then the extent to which we receive money from the GST, some states need to be funded more than other states because we have higher costs through a lower population density and the population being spread across a larger area. So we're not being subsidised. It's just reflecting the reality that if you want comparable service levels across the nation, if you want hospitals, policing, courts, teaching, education, all those things provided a comparable level right across the nation, then that requires some transfer from the bigger states that have lower costs to the smaller states. We're not being subsidised. I don't accept that. Sarah.
Treasurer, just on Moody's analysis of this state budget, they suggested that in future you will need to revisit the Sustainable Budget Commission's report. Can you give us an indication as to how you will meet their required savings for next year's budget and if you will be looking at the SBC report again?
Look, I've got no plans to have another look at the SBCC report. I think we've pretty much undertaken the savings measures we had to. It was certainly an option that we have another look at the SBCC report when we were faced with the downturn in revenues, but we chose not to go down that path. I think I'm very conscious of just imposing yet another round of savings measures on the public sector, on CEs, and expecting them to carry them out. I'd rather them to know this is what we expect of you over the next few years in terms of the savings measures you've got to carry out, without me sort of constantly every year, every budget, imposing more and more upon them. So I resisted another heavy round of savings measures because I simply want our public sector to be able to digest the measures that were announced in last year's budget.
But do you accept that the state government will have to find that 2.4% savings?
Yeah, indeed. We've got to make sure that we reach those savings targets. We've got certain strategies in place, particularly through the Sustainable Budget Cabinet Committee, and having regular reporting from chief executives and ministers to the Sustainable Budget Cabinet Committee on where they're at in terms of their meeting their savings objectives. I have to say, up till now, I've been pretty happy with how that's been going. A few little areas we might have to subject to a little bit more scrutiny. But on the whole, our CEs and other public sector managers have responded very well, and I'm confident that we'll meet what are admittedly very ambitious savings measures.
But how will you meet those savings measures if you're not going to be looking at the recommendations of the SBC report?
Well, we've already got the savings measures in place, so now it's a matter of making sure that we do what we've said. So, for example, the reduction in FTEs, the now 4,100 reduction in FTEs going forward, that will have to be carried out. So we'll monitor what's happening with that, so the departments will send information back to Treasury about how they're going in reaching those FTE reductions. And the chief executives will have to report on exactly what they've done, how they've gone about, where they're at in meeting those savings measures. So a strong regime of reporting back to both Treasury and to the Sustainable Budget Cabinet Committee. Over that process, I'm confident we'll meet those savings.
Okay, thank you.
Bernard Dobe, scientist, Adelaide. We all appreciate the great financial benefits that have come to Western Australia from the mining boom. Would you like to appreciate some comments upon South Australia's position in relation to that and future projections from mining income and how they might relate to the overall proportion of the budget?
It will take a little while before we see mining royalties coming to state coffers on the same scale that they do in Western Australia. I think basically as a state we are where Western Australia probably was about 20 years ago. That's not to say it's going to take us 20 years to get to where Western Australia is now. I think it'll take a lot less time than that, but we still need to work very hard to make sure that happens. But it'll be much longer even than that before we're seeing massive inflows of revenue from royalties. Where we will get a benefit from, particularly with the Olympic Dam, is just a general increase in economic activity. You'll see people with higher wages, more people employed, more people with higher wages. You'll see small businesses. You'll see more property transfers as people move into the state and buy housing. You'll see businesses move into the state buying property. So you see that general lift in economic activity across the state, and I think we'll start to see that over the next 5 to 6 years, that general lift across the state of economic activity on the back of particularly the Olympic Dam expansion, but also other mining projects across the state. But it will take a little bit longer than that. But before we see any sort of windfall, there's no windfall in the near future from royalties. BHP with the Roxby Downs expansion we're not expecting them to pay any increase in royalties from the expansion for probably another almost a decade before really we start to see a big increase in royalties from Roxby Down. But that's not to say that we won't get a general lift from that increase in economic activity that we'll see right across in the state and the sort of spin-offs because of the size of the project. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Treasurer. Thank you also to everybody with those questions. A check of the world financial markets within 24 hours of the state budget being delivered unfortunately did not elicit any reference to South Australia. So while our budget and our AAA rating is certainly very important to us, we didn't really rate a mention anywhere else outside of our borders. Nevertheless, I think the Treasurer has shown today that he can add, as well as the words, still descriptions of moderate, responsible, comfortable and restrained, consistent to that character reference as well with his delivery today. Thank you, everybody. And Treasurer, we have a thank you. Thank you. I voted. And enjoy what's left of your dessert, and we'll do the raffle draw shortly. Before you go, I'll just do another plug and reminder for our upcoming lunches. Just if you've got your iPhones, your phones, you can put the dates straight in them now. Tuesday, July 5 is Peter Lloyd. Wednesday, July 7 is Chief Justice John Doyle. And Monday, August the 15th, sorry, the other two are Tuesday, sorry, Wednesday, Monday the 15th of August, Christine Nixon. Thank you, and thank you very much for coming today and supporting the Press Club.